Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome, and with us today, we have Brittany from Henrika Farms. Brittany, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you were just telling me where the name Henrika Farms comes from. Do you mind saying that again? Because that was so cool. And you're up in New York, very close to where I am. What's the history of the farm?
Yeah, so when my husband and I bought our house in 2017, we started cleaning out our very large barn on our property. And we were finding record books from when our house was first built. And in the late 1800s, early 1900s, our house was a cottage for the socialites of Albany and New York City. And we have all of the guest records from when they stayed, and it was called Henrika Cottage.
That is so cool. That must have been so neat to go through and just see, like, who stayed there. And I know, like, for instance, in the Broadway musical Hamilton, you know, a lot of that took place around, like, the Albany area, and they have a place up in, like, Saratoga area, too. Did they have any, like, names in the book?
So my husband's grandma actually went through every single page of the book and found connections that she was aware of. And in a crazy twist of things, her across the street neighbor, which is her very best friend, the original owner of her house was a jeweler for the Albany area, and he stayed in our house.
Oh, that's cool. What history, like right under our noses.
I know, it's wild. She did all like the legwork and just told me the highlights. I'm sure there's other cool connections, but that's like the one that comes to mind.
Yeah. So, now, I had reached out to you because you have kind of like a little homestead, right? And you do your homeschooling on there. And I'm going to let you kind of just go ahead and talk about it. Like, where did homeschooling even start for you and your family?
Okay, so I think what's important is for me to tell you a little bit about my background, because I think that that all goes into why we decided to start homesteading. And it was just like a big spiral. So I joined the Army in 2008, so I've been in for around 15 years. I'm a commissioned officer, and through that time, I started by being every level of leadership for a company of engineers. We responded to Hurricane Irene. We built roads and soccer fields and a whole bunch of stuff for local Vermont communities. It was an excellent experience, and really that like made me dive into what the trades are, right? Because I had a lot of equipment operators and people who were loving life, making a significant amount of money, doing things without a college education. I was obviously in college at the time, and I went to school to be a high school social studies teacher. And when I graduated from high school, or from college, I came back to New York and realized that I needed to have more of an education to teach in New York. And I ended up getting my certifications in literacy, special education, elementary school education, and probably a lot of other things that I don't even remember anymore. So I'm a professionally certified teacher, and I started working in Cobeskill, Richmondville, which is a very rural school. It's one of the biggest schools in Schoharie County, but it's still very rural. And my first teaching assignment was to be a consultant teacher with our ag teacher. And I think that she just opened my eyes. We ended up buying our house in between Cobeskill and Albany because my husband's a professional firefighter. And Bern was where it landed. Nice and rural, small community, but still pretty spread out. And I was talking with the ag teacher one day about how I was going to have to convince my husband to let us get stuff, like get animals, get chickens. And then I just received a picture of ducks and chicks in his the front seat of his truck. And I say to everyone that chickens are like a gateway drug. They just lead to more and more and more and more. So soon after that, with the like consult of this wonderful ag teacher, we started with goats, have since gotten rid of them, and then a small sheep herd and cows. And I now have a pretty substantial garden in which I provide CSAs, so community-supported agriculture, the vegetables and bounty of our homestead to 7 different families throughout the spring, summer, and fall. And then we have our sheep herd, like I said, and we just started kind of getting into the groove of having a homestead, and this was all while we were both working full-time. So then I know that you've talked about this a lot with your other guests, and it changed some things for you too, but like everyone else, COVID hit, and I was teaching remotely from my house, from my back porch, and that first, I guess it was May, because it was nice out, I was sitting on my back porch doing a Zoom call with my students, my high school students, and my 2- and 3-year-old were running around in the backyard by the garden, by the chickens and such. And I can't remember exactly what they were doing, but I remember having this moment looking at them with the green grass and thinking, they know more and are more capable than the majority of my high school students. And not to speak badly of the students that I taught, they were all wonderful kids. You know, they're all trying the best that they can, but there's some skills in life that you can't get unless you do it, and you can't get unless you have a mentor to help you do those things. And I just thought, I think that's my calling, that I need to bring this to other kids, other families, bring it to the future of our nation. And clearly, like, my life and my husband's life is public service, and we do what we do for our community, for our future. And I always had thought that I would open a school. Like when I was getting my master's degree, I would kind of joke with my friends and my husband. We would see some beautiful plot of land and say, we should open a school there. It would be great. But in that moment, when things were so crazy and no one was sure of what was happening, I walked inside and I said, I think this is our time. We need to open a school. And so I just ran with it. I was blessed with some time off for the Army, where in January of 2021, I was doing a course for the Army for 3 weeks, and I just barreled down, used that time, figured out how the heck to open a business, which was really not easy, and just went for it and got all the logistics done, everything set up so that end of the school year, I told my principal that I wasn't going to come back, told my union that I needed to not do this anymore, and went in a whole new direction. And Henrika Farm Center was born.
Wow. That's an amazing story. I mean, I hope one day you'll write a book on it, because that's just everything you said was just so cool. Let me see where to start. First and foremost, thank you for your service. And I loved what you said in the very beginning too about the people doing what they love to do and they didn't need these 4-year degrees. And I talked with Connor Boyack, the author of The Tuttle Twins, about that. I think he has a book out about not necessarily needing a 4-year degree unless what you're going into definitely needs that. And my husband is in the trades, and there's so many kids being steered into 4-year degrees when it's stuff they like doing. I mean, for instance, just HVAC that my husband does, I don't feel like school really tells you everything that's involved with being an HVAC service technician. I mean, things like working on a chiller the size of your house and how much electrical goes into that and all of the different jobs you could be doing with HVAC. We definitely aren't, our country isn't doing a great job in the school system at letting kids know that, you know, you don't need that 4-year degree all the time.
I will just say, I want to give a little bit of credit to some public school teachers and programs. When I taught at Cobleskill, I was a part of a rather large special education service for high schoolers, and that program did really try to enlighten kids on what they could do for trades, especially since it was very unlikely they were going to go to college. So I feel like it's the tracks. We're back to the track system, right? Where the kids who are, put quotes around this, capable to go to college and are interested in going to college, that's what they're pushed and that's what they're told. And then the kids whose academics don't equal college, they are more pushed towards the trades, which is excellent. They should be pushed towards the trades. Do I think that we do a fabulous job of telling everyone what jobs are available? We could do better. I don't even know what all jobs are available. People are trying, I think.
Right, yeah.
There is just such a skill set deficit in our country. There's a big age gap where our experienced tradesmen with all the knowledge, the people who actually know how to build a house from the ground up, are retiring, and we don't have anyone that has been mentored yet. So you're totally correct. The skills are in a bad place right now.
Yeah, and just thinking of these kids that are, you know, college bound, I mean, you need smart people in the trades. So, you know, you need people that are good attention to detail, bookworm kind of people because they're running the world, right? With the work that they do. They're, you know, just the little bit that I know from what my husband does, he's working on chillers that make operating rooms function, you know, without that work. And he could easily be like probably blown to pieces if any little bit of work that he does isn't done right with the amount of, like, they work with steam and on schools, he's working on jails. So you think if anything were to be not done correctly on a school, it could start a fire. And so it is kind of funny. And I know in New York, we call it like the BOCES program. So it just has like this weird connotation to it anyway. And instead of, hey, whether you're, you know, you're smart enough to get a 4-year degree, but you're also smart enough to, you know, work with this electrical equipment, which path would you like to choose? And getting into the schooling. So what does the day look like? You take on other kids from your community then, right?
Yeah. So in terms of homeschooling, my oldest son just turned 6 this summer. And so we, in New York State, you officially have to start reporting homeschooling when they turn 6 by December 1st. So we actually on Monday just started to try to get into the swing of a schedule for our family, incorporating homeschooling lessons. And so this year looks a little bit different for Henrika Farm Center than it has in previous years, because one thing that it's super easy to do when you have a homestead and when you start looking into things that I know you and I have both looked into, it's really easy to feel like you need to do everything on your own because you're the one you can trust. So I've kind of started to recognize that I need to back off a bit and focus on what's most important and try to rely on my community a little bit more for some other things. So this school year, I'm paring back what Henrika Farm Center offers to try to best meet the needs that I've noticed in my community and what my family needs in terms of time with me home and able to school my son. So I do offer 2 core programs for the farm school, and that's like your kind of typical preschool, ages 3 through 6. We do that in the morning, and that's really like a child-led, exploration-based program focused on nature and agriculture. The kids help with the daily farm chores. They get to just sit and be with the animals. Sometimes we groom our cows or we groom the sheep. They really just are there with us and get to see what happens on a homestead and connect to their food sources, connect to nature. We go on a lot of walks in our woods, by our pond, and sometimes we even go into the caves that we have on our property. So I just really try to let them establish those really good social bonds and social etiquette in a structured outdoor situation.
I just ordered my copy of A Connected Christmas from Treehouse Schoolhouse. Lindsay, the creator of Treehouse Schoolhouse, who I interviewed in episode 21, writes, I have always wanted the Christmas season to be beautiful and nostalgic for my children. My desire for this season is to mark their hearts with traditions and give them warm memories of togetherness in our home. Most of all, I want the Advent season to draw them to their Savior. Out of these desires, A Connected Christmas was born. I mean, come on! Who doesn't want that for their kids? How nice does that sound? So what is included in A Connected Christmas? Well, it comes with a 42-page teacher's guide with weekly grids, daily lesson plans, recipes, and handcraft instructions. I'm pretty sure handcraft is just fancy for arts and crafts. And then it comes with a set of student sheets with scripture, artwork, poetry, and hymn display sheets for copywork. And then you also get a narration notebook. Now you can get this with a digital download or you can purchase the hard copy. And really, it's just a 3-week Advent study designed for the whole family. So whether you make this part of your morning routine or something that you guys do after dinner, it is such a beautiful way to bring these warm memories to the Christmas season for you and your family. A Connected Christmas is an invitation to gather your family and celebrate beauty and delight through festive carols, stories, poetry, art, baking, and handcrafts. It's about family and it's about Jesus. It's about connecting hearts to the heart of Christmas. To purchase your copy, just go to treehouseschoolhouse.com/thehomeschoolhowtopodcast and use the Homeschool How To Podcast to get 10% off your entire order. Or you can go to the show's description and click on the link there using promo code thehomeschoolhowtopodcast. I really hope you enjoy. Thank you for listening.
Then in the afternoon, I have kids that get off of our local school bus at the farm, and my goal with them is to do some more hands-on team building, no screen activities, and we do things like building doors for the greenhouse or putting up fencing for the pastures or moving the temporary rotational grazing for the sheep. Sometimes they help with some of the more icky, you may say, farm chores like cleaning out housings or cleaning out coops. And I just try to model for everyone like good work ethic and what it takes to sustain lives. And usually what I do is like if cleaning the chicken coop is on the roster, it's kind of a crappy job, pun intended there. No one really likes it. But it is nice to see the fruits of your labor at the end. And so I work very hard and I have the goal of getting the chicken coop done. If the kids are with me and helping, great. I reward them throughout that with positive reinforcement. If they are just not feeling it and they want to explore the like little lilac grove next to the chicken coop, awesome as well, because they still get to be involved. They still get to see what we're doing and like the pros and the cons and the benefits of sustaining life. But it's not like a pressured environment. And I think that that really helps them to build all of the small things that come with homesteading and providing for others.
Yeah. Just being exposed to that this exists in the world is probably doing wonders for them as they get older. So you're taking on two different groups of kids, and I'm thinking of this in terms of like, how could I do this? How could I make this work? I did get chickens 2 years ago. It was not like a drug for me because, but you're the second person in 24 hours that has said that. A dad at yesterday's homeschool play group, he said the same thing. My chickens, sometimes I want to just unleash them into the woods and let them be coyote food, but we'll wait till they stop laying. No, they're not bad, but we are getting more. A friend is giving us more, so maybe. And I'm working on my husband on making a chicken tractor right now, because then it'll be a little bit more fun, so that they can actually move around our property. If I let them free range right now, they just go into my garden and eat everything, and or they go into where there's like a planted plant with mulch and they just like throw the mulch everywhere. They only poop on pavement. So then my kids are running in the poop. So my dog's licking it up. Then he's throwing up. So I think when the chicken tractor is born, I'm going to like these chickens a lot better. But They've been around 2 years, so they're kind of like part of the family now. Anyway, I haven't gotten anything else, any other animal. Do you use your cows for milking or for actually eating one day?
Yeah, I try hard to do as much as I can with what we have. And that certainly has been like developed over the years. So our cows, we have a Scottish Highlander cow and then a Scottish Highlander bull. And previously our cow had a couple miscarriages or, well, stillborns, which was horrible for everyone. But when that happens, you have to either milk out the milk or try to find another calf to take on, or well, hope that the cow will take on the calf. And so 2 years ago, I think, the years kind of blend together, but 2 years ago when she had her second stillborn, we've called a local farmer and he had two calves that had no mom. One was a milk cow, a dairy cow, and one was a meat cow. And so we tried to graft them to our Highlander. Her name's Koala. She didn't take them. She wouldn't let them nurse, but then we had these two calves. So we recently butchered the beef cattle for beef for our family, my mom, my husband's mom. And then I worked on tanning the hide because I felt like I needed to show my kids that we shouldn't just be throwing all this stuff away. And it was a remarkably humbling experience. If you ever want to tan a hide,
what does that even mean? Tanning the hide. What is that?
So making it into a rug. I turned it into leather, his skin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
so we have this beautiful rug in our bedroom now that was completely raised on the farm 100%. It never left the farm one day. My son and I and one of my close friends worked very hard to get it to the point where it was preserved. And it's excellent. It was such a humbling amount of work, but now I feel really confident in my ability. And from that, this year when we butcher all of our lambs, I'm going to make sure that we have the hides. And I've done sheep hides before. They are a little bit easier. But so now I am using these animals, you know, for everything that they've got instead of just throwing them into the compost or throwing them away as if they were waste. I'm really trying to show the kids that we need to honor what Mother Earth has given us and the hard work that both we and the animals have done to get to this point. And so this fall when we butcher the lambs, my plan is to sell the meat, tan the hides, and sell the rugs, and use the skulls for decor items for people who they're into that. Maybe make some jewelry. I'm not sure. I just really want to try to honor what we're given and the life that we're living and show the kids the same thing and try to instill that into their being.
Yeah, and that is so important and something I definitely didn't grow up with. But even just I wanted to take a baby step into knowing what goes into the meat that goes into our bodies. So we went this year to a local farm and purchased the half. I think I did a quarter cow and a half a pig. And even just as we're eating it, if my son doesn't want to eat all of his dinner, saying, you know, this animal gave his life for us. We do not want to just waste this food. Mm-hmm. There are people that don't even have dinner tonight. And it kind of just brings it on a little bit closer of a level to knowing that this, to like thinking about the life that went into this to put nourishment into our bodies. Because when we do go to the grocery store, I mean, it just kind of separates it. We lose that really beautiful process, you know. And I'm sure that there are people, and I probably was one of them years ago, being like, oh my God, you'd make a rug from it. But, you know, listening to the, like using the whole, but I mean, and what are you going to do with our bodies once we're gone? I mean, you know, you'd want to be honored, right? Like, that's why. Yeah. We have pictures around of, you know, deceased people. There is a memory that goes along with it. And once you really think about the beauty behind it and how all nature takes this whole circle of life, Lion King approach to it, and it is important to keep that. So was it hard to find kids, or are people lining up at the door asking for you to give their kids this experience?
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit of both. I do have to work a bit in terms of marketing my business. And I will be the first one to tell you, I am not good at social media. That's just not on my brain. It's not the thing that I think about. So my marketing that way is not my number one skill. But I do know that word of mouth is a big marketing thing for small businesses, and I feel like I'm succeeding in that. I just think every day that if I give the kids that are with me the best education and best experiences that I can, that's what I need to do. The rest will come. There's no point in focusing on the small logistics. I mean, there's a point because I do have to feed my family and pay my mortgage, but I just try to do the best that I can and hope that everyone sees that. And I feel like they do.
Have you gone into just a homeschool, local homeschool Facebook and kind of said, this is what I offer?
Yeah, I try to post in like our Crunchy Moms of the Capital District group. And I try to post in the groups of the people that I feel like my programs would appeal to. I really don't think that that's my main marketing avenue, though. I don't feel like many people come to me because of Facebook. Maybe because I'm not great at it, but I think that the big thing is word of mouth, and I really try hard to put in my head that if I'm giving the kids and the families the best experience possible and I'm doing everything for them that I've said I would and that I can to help them thrive in life, you know, the rest will come. If we build it, they will come, right? That's the engineering motto. So I just try to go every day with honoring the kids that are present, setting up nice situations for the families, really connecting with them, and hope that they tell people that they know how much they love it, which I feel like they do. I do have, like, I offer summer camps, and I have found that those sell out, like those book up within a month. It's crazy how much demand there is for summer camps. The school year programs are a little different, and that might be because with some of our regulations in New York State, I can't offer full day programs.
Have you looked into the private membership association and within that the private education association, PMAs and PEAs?
I have not. I have, like, I did dabble in what it would look like if I became a private school or a charter school. And once again, the regulations in our state make it, like, there would be pros of that. But I think that for the people I appeal to, the people who are looking for freedoms in terms of what their children have to do or have to know, if I had an official certification with the state, it would restrict those freedoms. So,
yeah, it would, I think, definitely look into the Private Education Association. Just, I mean, I think they, from what I've looked into so far, is that they don't even teach that stuff to lawyers in law school because they don't want people knowing this stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, hidden in the law books. But I know there are certain people, the people I found talking about it had more of like a farm stand market, but it was interesting the stuff they were saying that that they're allowed to do if they certify under a private, that was a private membership association, but the private education association is just an avenue off of that. And like, I'm thinking, so you'll take kids that are, like, if they're coming off the bus, they're in school, they're not homeschooled. So that's an interesting experience, too, because, now that I think about it, like, if your school day ends at 2:10, but I'm mom and I work till 5, having a couple hours that my kid can go be in nature and learn some real-world things that I wouldn't provide to them elsewhere, that's amazing. I didn't even think about that for myself, you know. I do know a lot of moms in the area, like I'm on the other side of the Capital Region from you, who, mm-hmm. you know, they do work and they want to homeschool their kids. And I'm at the, like, where our kids are the same age. So I give you so much credit for delving in, like, especially before your kids are even at the age you're taking on the other kids, because you've been doing Thank this you. For a couple years now. I give you so much credit. But yeah, I'm also at the, like, oh, I don't want to take on too much and overwhelm myself and then kind of ruin the experience for myself. I want to go in, like, testing the waters and make sure what I decide to do is right. Because when you're, yeah. when you're involving other people's kids, especially, you don't want to do something and be so overwhelmed and then have to take it back the next year. And now they don't have it anymore. And so, yeah, I'm really trying to tread lightly as I enter into where my life is supposed to head next.
You know, I think the after school thing is really a gift to your community, because schools, especially post-COVID, recognized how more streamlined things can be on the computer. So the kids really have a lot of screen time. And not to say their teachers aren't giving them other opportunities too, but just giving them that specific time where, like, there's not even a TV in sight on the farm, right? So they can't even think about wanting that. And it just gives them such a nice detox and such an extra connection to nature. Whether or not those kids go camping all the time, do all these things on the side, it just gives them such a unique experience. And you're right, it gives the parents just that extra 2 hours to be able to finish their committed mm-hmm. employment time.
So how hard was it for you to leave this career that, you know, you worked hard in school to get all the certifications that you need, and, you know, you left a pension too. How yep. did you rationalize that in your mind? Because I'm going through the same thing, you know, that's why I ask.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few ways that I was able to be okay with it. The first is, like, the big hit, the mm-hmm. salary reduction. And I kind of sat down with my mom and myself and just thought through what that would look like. My mom's just very good at being realistic and rationalizing things with me. And I kind of, like, she said, okay, you're going to reduce your salary by, let's say, $20,000. I'm making up these numbers, but you're going to have this much less income. But where are you going to gain things? So where are you going to replace things that make up for that income loss for your family? Not driving, so no gas, less time. The big thing for us was I produce most of our food for our family now, so there's less grocery stores trips, like drastically less. And then also, how much money is mm-hmm. your time worth? How much money is your time mm-hmm. worth with your children? Can you put a number on that? I feel like I could, you know, put $40,000 a year on that, just being able to be with my kids and then not having to pay someone to watch our kids. We're up to three now, and I know yep. that it's expensive. I personally recognize how expensive it is because I charge families that. And so there's just other methods of income that aren't money.
Hey friends, thank you for checking out this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you haven't already, please check out episode 24 with Connor Boyack, author of the Tuttle Twins book series. As you guys know, if you listen to me regularly, I have been reading those books well before I became a podcast host. I read them with my son. He just turned 5. Check out my link, thehomeschoolhowto.com/Tuttle. That's how they will know I sent you, so I can get a little bit of credit. And then you get credit when you put in promo code Cheryl40. That is CHERYL40. Get 40% off book series for ages 5 through 11. These books are so awesome because they talk about real life scenarios about democracy, government, our liberties, and our freedoms. Things that we are not taught in the school system. And of course, why would a school system run by the government tell us that the government might not be all great for us? So please check out thehomeschoolhowto.com/Tuttle and use promo code Cheryl40. You can get the link and the code in my show's description.
And then my other way was when I was 18, I joined the Army. And not only did that pay for my college, not only did that give me a regular income, it's not a lot, but it is an every month income. But I have a pension that I can retire in 3 years.
Wow, good for you.
That's awesome. So thank you. I won't collect that pension because I'm in the National Guard. I won't collect it till I'm 60, but I know it's there. So that helps some. And then I probably, honestly, will. I love going to school. I love learning. I would like my PhD at some point, and I would really love to be a college professor. I teach for the Army, so I teach to adults, and I really love it as well. So I think my 10-15 year plan is that I would eventually be a college professor at a state school and get my pension back. But, you know, if that doesn't work out, I've created backup streams. And something that my tax professional said to me is that, yeah, you don't have a retirement system, but you have a business that you can sell that is, in essence, a retirement.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good way to look at that.
Yeah. When she said that, I thought, holy smokes.
Yeah, to sell a business. So
if you're building something that is needed and that is valued in your community, you have value there as well.
Yeah, I'd love to come visit you sometime and just kind of see what you have going on and what I can emulate from that and totally steal your ideas. but like you said, if it's a need and other people, that could be a business right there. Like, come to my farm, see what I do, what I offer, how I make it work, and steal the template, you know, for a price.
I have a family who, you know, they were my two oldest children's best friends. They were in the first core group of the Henrika Farm Center, and they moved to Montana for the father's job. And she had said to me, you know, maybe I should start a farm school out here. And I'm just anxiously waiting for her to reach back out and say, can you help me start a farm school? Because I will shout from the rooftops, yes.
You should reach out to her because she probably thinks you're too busy and she doesn't want to bother you like I did. so you should reach out to her. Side note, now my niece is in the Army National Guard. I wonder if you teach her through any of this stuff. She graduated last year in Missouri. That's where, for the military police.
Yep, that's where I went as well.
Is it? I actually went out for her graduation last year. That was cool. I was pregnant and brought my son. And okay, so we're in upstate New York. It gets cold. The winters are bad, especially you're up on a mountain. Do you have the kids outside, obviously, all year long, even in the cold? What does that even look like in a day for you guys?
Yeah, so this question is asked a lot, and it's definitely logistically something to think about. In where I live, you're right, we live up in a mountain, and we're actually zone 4B, which is significantly colder than the rest of New York. I even have to like pressure can my products for longer because I live at a higher altitude. But let me tell you something, kids don't realize that. And kids are resilient. They're not bogged down by the things that our adults are telling, you know, our brains tell us that we're freezing cold just because there's snow on the ground. Kids don't know that yet. So really, the key thing is that myself and the families dress them well. I really emphasize the importance of things like wool base layers and keeping dry and good outerwear that's waterproof, because with that, you could be out in the, you know, you could be in Alaska and not know. People live in Alaska. People live in the freezing cold all the time, and they work and they play and they enjoy their lives. So that's what we do. We get dressed well. This year I purchased uniformed high quality snow suits and rain suits so that I can help teach independence to the kids on how to get dressed. And I really just talk to them and talk them through it and explain to them like what the fundamentals of keeping warm in a cold environment are, or keeping dry in a wet environment are. And it's so cute because they really like take it on. You know, they're little sponges. They get it. They absorb it. And last year I had a little girl who she was coming to school in cotton socks for a while. And I just really tried to emphasize to her and to her family the importance of wool socks. It changed everything for her when she started wearing her wool socks. She was no longer crying because of cold feet. And by crying, like, I'm not letting the kids be miserable, but, you know, they get to a point where they're having so much fun and they realize that they're cold because they're not dressed well enough and they just get sad. But so after I got them figuring out the importance of wool socks, she would come to school every single day and just go, "Miss Brittany, I have my best wool socks on today." Oh. Or, "And I have three extra pairs in my bag, so I'm ready."
Oh, that's so cute. You know, I've never even thought of getting wool socks for my son.
It's so cute. It is expensive to dress well, but it pays dividends.
Yeah, I'm totally going to do that this year and for myself.
Oh, wool socks all the way. Like, wool socks in the summer is good. You could wear wool every single day of your life and be comfortable.
So you let the parents know, obviously, like, this is what they should be wearing. And I wouldn't even know where to begin for myself with that stuff. But you obviously learned it in the Army, because I know you guys had, you know, sleeping nights out in whatever terrain. And so you had to learn all that stuff there. For someone like me, what would you even suggest? Like, where do I go?
So there are great things out on this world wide web. There are great resources. EFRANS, the Eastern Regional Forest School Network, they're excellent with getting people started for having a forest school. I think you know about 1,000 Hours Outdoors. She is in a different region, so there's not as much talk about there, but like, there are so many gear guides out there if you just research it a little bit. And for my families, I do put together an intense gear guide resource with different recommendations of things that I have seen that work or don't work, even like a backpack. Seems like such a simple thing, but for little bodies that are outdoors trekking all day, it's one of the most essential things to make sure that their backpack fits and that it stays on, that it's not frustrating them. So that's kind of goes to what I was saying, that I try to really make connections with my families. I want to set them up for success and I want them to feel supported. So I give them as many resources as I can and that I know of. And when I learn about something new, I change things and let everyone know. And it's really, being outside is just about being dressed well. The wool, the waterproof stuff, and then moving around and having fun. We're not just like laying in the snow crying about the cold. We move around and enjoy ourselves. And I'm kind of strategic in what activities that we do based on the weather.
Oh, that is so cool. Well, before I take up too much of your time, because I know you are so busy, I would love to come out and visit you guys if you're ever up to having my kids and I, because I just think this would be so amazing and I'd love to emulate what you're doing. And thank you so much for doing this for your community too and your kids. What a cool childhood you're giving them all. Not even just your own. Like, you're giving all these kids such a fun childhood and valuable information. I hope more of these pop up all across the country, because I wish I grew up this way.
Thank you very, very much. I really am trying my hardest to provide a great childhood and a great start to their future and the future of our nation, because the 3- and 4-year-olds, the 7- and 8-year-olds, they're the ones who are coming up to change things, and they're the ones who we can influence into building a better community and bringing to them the world that they want and the experiences that they want out of life. So I'm just hoping that my little part here is that I can build kids who are connected to nature, connected to their community, connected to everything that goes into being, and helping them to be stewards of the future.
Well, Brittany, thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you for chatting with us here today. And if anyone wants to check out your homestead, they can go to henricafarmcenter.com, and I will put links in our show's description. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Mm-hmm. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or, if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.